Hey, John, Jim Daly here along with John Fuller.
Hello, John.
We wanted to congratulate you on your interview being part of our Best of 2025 program.
Yes, thank you for sharing your outstanding insights and perspectives with our Focus on the Family audience.
Yeah, the way you corroborated Pam's experience and supported her story with your research truly made an impact on the listeners. You're making a real difference, my friend, in their faith journey. So thank you so much for sharing your heart and wisdom with us. And we want to wish you and Kathy a wonderful year filled with God's richest blessings.
The walled city was like heaven with the pearly gates, only they were much more golden then. And the angels were above that, and they were dancing, and they were glittering gold. And then it was shift and morph to the mountains. And the mountains even were like even more beautiful than any mountain range that I've ever seen anywhere.
That's Pam Farrell sharing a bit of her incredible out-of-this-world experience on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. She joins us along with John Burke. I'm John Fuller, and thank you for joining us.
John, I'm really excited about the program we're about to record, and I think people are going to enjoy it. John Burke has been here a few times with such breathtaking accounts of people who have had near-death experiences and really a phenomenal a way to approach those things, to categorize them. We'll hear more from him in a moment. But I've just always been taken by that. His wonderful book, Imagine Heaven, made a big difference in Gene and I's life. Mm-hmm. I mean, we just were captivated by it. And we also learned one of our popular guests and good friend, Pam Farrell, had an experience herself. And we know that we had to bring John and Pam together and kind of dialogue about that experience and get mm-hmm. John's expertise on yeah. what happened. I'm so excited to dig into this story. And it's just, again, one example of thousands, literally hundreds of thousands of examples of where people have touched that perimeter of heaven mm-hmm. and been able to come back and then explain it. Yeah. This is so good.
Yeah, we live in a world where we think this is it. And the truth is, true. There's a whole lot more beyond this. And John Burke, just by way of background, John founded Gateway Church in Austin, Texas. And you mentioned his book, Imagine Heaven, that sold over a million copies and continues to be a bestseller. Pam Farrell is a speaker and author, and as you said, she's been here a number of times as well. She and Bill, her husband, typically speak to relational issues and concerns and well-being, but she's captured her story in a book called Glimpse of God's Glory, One Woman's Near-Death Experience. You can learn more about our guests and their books at focusonthefamily.com.
John, Pam, welcome back to Focus. It's always good to see you.
Thank you. Such an honor, privilege to be with you all.
Yeah, great to be back.
Yeah, it's fun. Let me ask this of you, John, first, before we start to unpack, Pam, your story. You've written Imagine Heaven, Imagine the God of Heaven, which is the follow-up, an additional excellent resource. Mm-hmm. But just lay the Christian perspective on what we call near-death experience. So just give us that quick tutorial on it and what you've experienced.
Yeah, so I think they are testimonies from God of the reality of heaven and hell and God's reality, the triune God of the Bible. And that's what I'm trying to show in my writing. And Imagine Heaven, I'm showing how when you look at the millions of people, and it's millions who have had
not hundreds of thousands,
no.
but millions.
2019 study reported by the European Academy of Neurology across 35 countries found that 5% of the population of all those countries has had a near-death experience mm-hmm. when they were near clinical death.
And define what clinical death is.
So clinical death is heart stops beating, no brain waves. It's the way we define death. Now, importantly, I don't think that's the same as eternal death.
Right.
It's not crossing over into either eternal life or eternal death. And these near-death experiences, I've come to believe, are something in between. And that's important because they are experiencing the reality of heaven or the reality of hell or God's reality, but they're somehow still connected to this life. They haven't
tether,
crossed over.
The tether isn't yeah. cut yet.
Exactly.
For whatever reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, I report in Imagine the God of Heaven that Jesus even tells them that. You haven't fully died yet. You need to go back. So I don't know exactly what this is we're learning, right? there are mysteries beyond this life.
Well, I think what I've appreciated when we've talked in times past is just for the Christian, and I would say for the viewer and listener right now, just leave your mind open for a little while and just say, Lord, show me. Let me hear this conversation. And I think that's what we have. We line up on one side saying, even to the extreme that this is somehow demonic, or the other side, which is where you've written, this is an insight. We're looking into something that we don't know.
Well, and it's important to realize that what people report is not necessarily the same as how they interpret what they report.
Which and is that, your distinction.
That's very critical. That's why it took me 35 years of researching thousands of them to understand all these things. That someone, so in Imagine Heaven, I trace like 40 commonalities of these experiences that people report.
Right.
And showing how they all align with the expectation of the afterlife in Scripture. And what you have to understand is someone may just have a few of those. You know, they leave their body, they feel all these new senses, not five senses, but more like 50 senses. Maybe they meet people deceased on the other side, and then they come back. Well, whether you're an atheist or a believer in Jesus or a Buddhist or a Muslim, you can interpret that a million different ways. But if you put all the commonalities together, it's this beautiful picture of the reality of the life to come. And as many say, it is more real than this life. Mm-hmm. They feel more alive than they've ever felt. And the presence of Jesus is the highlight of it all.
In addition to that, you have said in the past that those consistencies do point to scriptural references.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's one of the great things you've done in your book. So, Pam, let me turn to you. Welcome in.
Thank you.
We want to dive into that story that you had. You had a health scare that landed you in the hospital. So paint the picture for us and what
right.
took place.
Yeah. So I talk about it in Glimpse of God's Glory, and it took me a little while to write that book because the whole experience was so personal and so incredible and amazing. And but it started off with I had diabetes and 1.5, which is kind of a fragile diabetes, hard to like manage and hard to medicate. And I went to an endocrinologist and she gave me some new meds, but they were supply chain issues. So I couldn't take them on this trip that I was going on to speak for creatives in Texas. And on the way to Texas, somehow I thought I hurt my shoulder and I was in excruciating pain. And so when I landed, my sweet mentee, she's like helping me drag all my things to the car. And she's like, do you need to go to the doctor? And I'm like, no, I'll just gut it out. I just need some, you know, pain over the counter stuff. So I took various over the counter things and I was in pain more and more. The only time it seemed to let up was when I worshiped. Rebecca Friedlander is amazing. That's whose house I was at. And so when I worshiped, the pain would let up. And when I taught the word, the pain would let up, but then it would come right back. And then, so I called Bill. I said, okay, pick me up as close to the gate as you can. I mean, I literally can't even pick up my backpack.
Bill's your husband.
Yes, yep. My husband, Bill. And he's wonderful, amazing. And so he caught me. I was like crying as I stepped out of that, you know, Burbank airport. It was late at night, like midnight. He's like, you need to get to the doctor. I'm like, let me just go to sleep tonight and tomorrow morning, first thing, 5:30 a.m. We went to the neighborhood urgent care. And that physician gave me stronger painkillers, which I won't name, but yeah, it's scary for a diabetic to take the series of things that I had thrown in my body. And then he happened to take like an x-ray, and he called back and he's like, you broke your rib, that's why you're in so much pain. And then because I had broken my rib and I was in so much pain, my sugar elevated like crazy for the next few days, and all the over-the-counter meds plus the new med that he had given me totally shut down my digestive system. And so I became toxic, and the doctor later explained that I had some kind of an infection. And so on Sunday that year, it was just 2 years ago, It was hot. It was beautiful weather, but I had 5 blankets on me. I couldn't get warm. Huh. And I stood up and I was dizzy, and we were inland caregiving for Bill's then 93-year-old mom. And I grabbed the sides of the RV that Bill uses for the office, and I grabbed my heart as he walked in, and I said, "I think I'm having a heart attack, Bill." And my dad died of a heart attack at 62, and so it caught his attention. He's like, "Taking you to the ER right now." And so my wonderful husband put me on his back and carried me down to the wheelchair of Dad's. His dad is now in heaven. So he put me in the wheelchair, zoomed me to the car. 5 minutes later, we're at the best hospital in town, and I am the only one in the ER. Okay, that's like a huge miracle. Yeah. One miracle, I was with Bill. We were in 2 separate places. 2, we were 5 minutes from a great hospital. 3, I was the only one in the ER. And then I was the only one in the ICU. And Bill was continuing to say my background. So her dad died at 62, and her brother had a heart attack at 40, and she's diabetic. And the 2 doctors that were on call, one was a specialist in diabetes, the other was a specialist in heart. And so the diabetic specialist said, "Oh, I know what's happening here. It's a DKA," which is like a really long way to say, "You're going to have a diabetic coma. If we don't halt this, you could die." And so they put me in a medically induced coma to try to save my life. They basically had to reset my whole body. And as they put me into the medically induced coma, all I remember is Bill was my eyes and ears. He was totally my trust because I was going under. And the doctor said, "Pam, you need to slow down your breathing." I'm like, "Oh, I can't." That's the last thing I remember, is yelling at the doctor. But then the peace of God that passes all understanding had surrounded me from the time I said, "I think I'm having a heart attack." And so I had this overwhelming peace. And then as I stepped into what I call a glimpse of God's glory, the heavenlies, I saw a picture of, you know, Jesus was wrapped around me, and I could tell it was him because it was my wonderful counselor, the mighty God, the everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace, Isaiah 9:6. He was my Emmanuel, God with us. And people always say, "Did you see Jesus?" I said, "No, he wrapped me up in his presence." And it was fully peaceful, it was fully joyful, it was fully full of love, hope, beauty, like everything you can think of. And I could see the gates of heaven, how you picture it when you read the word. And there were angels, there's angels of all kinds, and they were every shape and size and ethnicity and all of, it was kind of like they all were filled with glitter, like the kind of shining glitter you can't even make in this world. It was golden. Everything was covered with this beautiful golden. And the angels were dancing before Jesus, and I could see them. And I was asking Jesus, "Okay, so is, like, am I, like, dead? Is this heaven? Like, what's going on here?" And we were communicating, but not with words, but rather his mind with my mind. And then the angels would like kind of morph after this beautiful dancing would occur. They would morph, and it turned into mountaintops with rushing rivers of gold. And I'm like, "What's up with this mountaintop thing? What are these rivers of gold? It looks like people that I love are scooping up all the gold." And I couldn't tell by their faces. I could tell by the way I felt about those that I loved. Mm. And he's like, "Pam, every day for the past decade, at 3:20, you've prayed Ephesians 3:20 over your life, over your family, over whoever you're with, over the last person you emailed, that God would do exceedingly abundantly beyond all you can ask, think, dream, or feel." I'm showing you what prayer looks like on my side of the equation.
You said that quickly. I want to make sure listeners, viewers catch that. At 3:20 a.m., you would set your
3:20
alarm.
3:20 p.m. I'm not up at 3:20
p.m. Okay. Well, you would set your alarm for 3:20 p.m.
I do. And every day I pray that God would do exceedingly abundantly beyond all we can ask, think, dream, or feel, Ephesians 3:20. And so that's just if you know me, I always challenge you, be a part of the 3:20 club, you know, every day pray at 3:20. So it's a part of like who I am, the fabric of spiritually who I am. And so when God said that rushing gold is a picture of me answering prayer, all I could think of was, Yes, of course. You know, in the Bible, it says in the beginning that God created the heavens and it was good, and God created the earth and it was good. God created men, it was good. God created women, it was very good. Well, that word good is tob, means beautiful, best, bountiful, and blessed. So, of course, that is a picture of how God answers prayer. And so I was just referring to all the pieces of scripture that I had known, and we were conversing, and it seemed timeless, seemed like I had all the time that I wanted to converse with Jesus, that he was fully able to be worshiped in heaven, yet talk to me and answer my questions. And towards the end of my time there, I said, okay, so I am so happy to stay here. It is beautiful. It is amazing. It is incredible. You are magnificent. But God, I also know that I have two grandsons that are ready to be born in 2 months. And I have 7 grandkids altogether then. I would love to pour into their life, but not my will, but yours be done. So if you take me to glory, like, I'm there. This is wonderful. This is everything and more. But if you want to send me back, I am willing. I am willing to be your, you know, spokesperson, share this and pour out. Like, I know that in my heart, I've finished the race and I've done the course. I mean, 61 books, you know them, God, because you gave them to me. I'm like, okay, I get it. But if you want to send me back for more, I'm willing. And just then Jesus said, okay, so you've been on the outside. The gates have not opened for you. It is not your time, Pam. I want you to go back. I have more for you to do. And just then, boom, my eyes opened. I was in the ICU. My bells and whistles that I was connected to, like, were going off. The nurse ran in. And Bill had been sent home about 3 a.m. And the doctor said, okay, we have Pam as stable as we can get her right now. And so if she wakes up, when she wakes up, if she wakes up, she's going to need you full, strong. So you need to get a little sleep. And so why don't you go home? And if anything changes, I'll call you. And Bill went, you know, 5 minutes away, no sleep, lots of prayer. And then he phoned. He waited till it was early enough. Our kids are a far-flung family, early enough to call all the kids, my mom, my brother. And also, he got on my computer and emailed all the groups that I run, Bible studies that I run, all everything I'm a part of. So the nation was praying for me. Mm-hmm. And then he got ready to come back. And it was probably close to noon at this point. So my nurse ran in, and I'm on a ventilator, another, like, serious thing. And my hands are tied down. And so I can't talk. And she's like trying to explain what has gone on. And I see this whiteboard over in the corner with a pen. And I point at it. She's like, you want to write me a note? And I nodded my head. So she brought it over and I wrote, thanks, heart, happy face. And I put an arrow towards her. And she started crying. She's like, nobody ever thanks us. And in my head, I'm like, what's wrong with people? You save people's lives every day and nobody ever thanks you. And just then Bill walked in. And he saw me writing. He's like, you're back. You're all the way back. You're writing and you're bossing people around. You're back.
I love it.
Yeah. A little bit of humor.
I love it.
Well, that's Pam Farrell, and obviously a very serious but also a very life-giving story about her experiences. And she's captured some of that in her book, Glimpse of God's Glory, One Woman's Near-Death Experience. This is Focus on the Family with Jim Daly, and we have John Burke in the studio with us as well. His book is called Imagine Heaven, and you can get both of those books. They're bundled for you at our store, and you can find that at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast. And we also have a free audio collection covering this topic with more conversations featuring John Burke, Lee Strobel, and Randy Alcorn. Look for the Remembering the Hope of Heaven audio collection when you're at our website.
John, I could see your eyes and the intensity. This is
yet all the, like, yeah, totally questions I want to ask.
And so I think there, you've done this for thousands of people, talking with them about those experiences. You come from that engineering background. You were agnostic. Mm-hmm. But speak to Pam's experience, and as you have interviewed other near-death experience people, the spiritual connection to that.
Yeah.
What are we hearing? What are you hearing?
Interestingly, you went into the coma and you were instantly there at the gates of heaven?
I was. Bill says it's kind of unfair because I got like this beautiful Hallmark heaven, amazing experience, and he got like made for TV ER.
Yeah.
So it was, he was like praying the whole time that I would make it. And his prayer was like, Lord, either way, if she goes to heaven, she's going to be fine because she's your girl. But we would love to have her back. Our family would love to have her back. But not my will, but yours be done. So we both were praying the same things. And in the whole heaven experience, I just felt like I was home because of all that I had read and taught about Jesus, about his personhood, about the creator God. Mm-hmm. I mean, I tell people all the time, when you get bad news, God is your creator, so he can create a way forward. He can create a way around. He can create miracles, yeah. Which I believe that I am a walking miracle. And it was his choice to send me back. And as I reflect on my experience, one of the first things I did is I wrote, Bill, please set up my tablet with worship music. So the whole next day, as I couldn't talk to anybody or explain what had gone on, I just worshiped. And that was a piece of heaven because I just felt like it was a continuance of what I experienced there.
Did you hear music in heaven?
I did, and you can't even explain it because it's so beautiful. Like, it's better than the best symphony. It's better than the best jazz concert. It's better than, like, whatever kind of music you really love or you praise music. It's, like, better. Everything's better.
Try to explain it because you said it almost exactly like several other people did.
Yeah. Okay, so when I was writing Glimpse of God's Glory, one of my biggest prayers is, Lord, I'm running out of synonyms for amazing, incredible, majestic, magnificent. Yeah. I mean, how many ways can you say it's better? Because that's what heaven is. Because the personhood of God is there.
Yeah.
And that's what's better. I think that now interpreting that golden light that I saw, the glimmering angel's wings, the gold on the gates of heaven, I think it was just a reflection of the living God who created us.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't even comprehend who he is and how beautiful he is. So that is how my mind like pulled it in so that I could picture it.
Yeah. It's interesting. Dr. Mary Neal, who I also interviewed, said she died underwater in a kayak, 30 minutes.
Oh,
dead.
I remember her story. Yeah.
So she said Jesus was, as soon as she said, God, your will be done,
yep.
She physically felt Jesus holding her, surrounding her.
Enveloping her.
And I asked, how did you know it was Jesus? And she said, it's like if I saw my husband in the grocery store, I don't have to ask, who are you? Or are you my husband? It's like, I just knew. It's like an intuitive.
He was my savior. I had recognized him from the time that I asked Christ into my life, you know, at 8 years old. I knew Jesus. So I knew him in heaven. Yeah. There was no debating on that part.
It's like my sheep hear my voice.
Yes.
And they follow me.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's something.
Yeah.
John, in that way, I mean, the critics will say, some doctors, in fact, will say, well, this might just be a near-death situation where our brain is excreting certain hormones in order to help us cope.
The neurotransmitters flooding your brain.
Hit some of that. Talk about what you've done in research to combat that and keep it more on a spiritual plane.
Well, yeah, in the new book, in Imagine the God of Heaven, chapter 2, I talk about science skeptics and NDEs. And I go through, because there are lots of alternate explanations other than what people like Pam typically say, which is, I was more alive than I've ever been in a place more real than this. This is the shadow. That's the real thing.
Huh. Yeah. That's common.
Yeah. That's common.
Yeah.
So that's the simple explanation. You know, there's a scientific principle called Occam's razor, which is, you know, in the complexity of options, go with the simplest explanation. Well, that's the simplest explanation. But there are lots of alternatives, like oxygen deprivation to the brain, anoxia, something called fighter pilot syndrome, where they get narrow tunnel and there's a bright light at the end and they say, well, see, that's a near-death experience. But interestingly, so some go through a tunnel to this place, but she was just there and so was Don Piper. He was just there. So it's, and others, they go out of our atmosphere and accompanied by angels through outer space. It's wild.
See their situation. And God didn't allow me to see the right. ER. He wanted me to see himself.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, all of the naysayers, I think, well, whatever reason, my God gave me that experience. And he had to put all kinds of pieces together to create that amazing experience of being with my creator God. And then it lines up with so many thousands and thousands of people over, you know, hundreds of years. You can go way back to the Bible. And so I think, you know, science can help explain it, but my God is still bigger than science. He created science.
Yeah, right.
Well, and it is. So for me, you know, I put 10 points of evidence in this chapter too, but just three of them real quick. One is people often do see they're in a spiritual body, just like Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians 15, which he says is buried in brokenness, but is raised in dunamai. That's the word we get dynamite, raised in power. And these new powers of the spiritual body are thought to thought, heart to heart, perfect communication, eyesight that's telescopic. You can see for thousands of miles. I mean, and experiencing sensations of even how things grow, a connectedness.
Everything's beautiful. Like, if you picture a pastoral scene, it would be the most beautiful painting you'd ever seen. God puts the most beautiful experiences, whatever I think he wants you to see,
so that you
draw closer. Yeah, like I mostly saw the gates of glory and experienced him, but anything I looked at, whether it was like the angels or whether it was the mountains, they all were the most amazing beauty. Like you can't even describe the colors.
So
the walled city was like heaven with the pearly gates, only they were much more golden then. And the angels were above that and they were dancing and they were glittering gold. And then it was shift and morph to the mountains. And the mountains even were like, we're right here in Colorado Springs. I mean, these are beautiful mountains. They were even more beautiful than any mountain range that I've ever seen anywhere, with the rushing golden rivers. So I think that God can't help himself. It's just going to be beautiful.
You know, at the end here, I mean, this is so much to take in. People are going, what? But when Jean and I read your book, John, particularly, both of them, in fact, the thing that it did for us both practically, like intellectually, but also emotionally, is almost like a preparation. And I remember at the end of reading that, just feeling like the way I want to go into this is yahoo, not fearful.
No.
And you know, again, we as Christians, we sometimes behave like we're not entirely sure. And some of that is understandable. I mean, many of us have not had that experience, Pam, that you've had.
Right.
And I think in that context, with so many people that you have interviewed, you have to be going, wow, this is just a transition. Like you just said a moment ago, this is the shadow. What's to come is the for real.
I mean, what they've commonly said to me is, I was alive and then I was more alive.
Yes.
I was conscious and then I was super conscious.
Yes.
Like there wasn't death. Jesus said, God is not the God of the dead. He's the God of the living.
Mm.
And yet we somehow picture the life to come a little bit less than this. It's not going to be less.
Right. And no. Jesus says that I am the way, the truth, and the life. And that word life is Zoe, that life that is created and sustained by God. Mm-hmm. Zoe. I mean, that's how I experienced it. And, you know, it was shortly after that I went to a conference. Well, first, I was like super grateful. They rolled me out
of
the hospital. And I had a little bit of, God, how come you saved me and not others? Because it was after COVID. And so I had a lot of questions. And basically God said, there's one God, you're not it. I am the sovereign one. And I really just laid it at his feet at that point. So it made me grateful. They rolled me out and I'm like, oh, the leaves are so beautiful. Oh, the grass is so beautiful. Oh, the breeze is so beautiful. I was like grateful for earthworms. I mean, I'm so grateful and I've lived
natural.
That way. Yeah. Yes, ever since. And shortly after that, I went to a conference that was a lot of my BFFs. that are authors and speakers. It's run through First Place for Health. And they wanted me to share my experience, and I did that. And a friend of mine said, I just picked up this little book. It's by an author that seems to really know what he's talking about, Pam, John Burke. And it's like just a sliver. And she gave me the little book. And I looked at the back, and we were sitting in the airport, all of us big name authors and speakers that you that have mostly been here on Focus. And we were talking about the reality of what God had shown me and this wonderful new book. And I looked on the back, I'm like, he's a Baker author. I'm a Baker author. I'm going to order this. So the first book that I read, wanting God's theology of what had just happened to me, mm-hmm. was Imagine Heaven by John.
Well,
and I've since given that to so many people who found comfort when they got bad news about, you know, a terminal illness, or maybe they've walked somebody through to heaven and they wanted to know, why did my mom reach up and say, do you see them? You know, why did it seem like they could see a glimpse of God's glory at the end of their days? And John's book has been a huge comfort to many people through some really hard times. It's given them a glimpse
of God's glory. What we fell in love with. And John, you know, don't let these accolades go to your head. But let me say this, you know, every year we measure the impact Focus has had. Last year, for that 12-month period, we had about 193,000 people make a decision for Christ.
Awesome.
And we're right at, it is awesome, and it was never, we never measured it before, and we just didn't think about it in that way, but family is a great evangelistic tool, because we're mostly coming from broken feelings and emotions, and the Lord can use that to rescue his people from that pain. Mm-hmm. And pain probably starts in the family, to be honest.
Yes.
But in that context, John, as a pastor who has done this now, you came from that engineering agnostic place, but I so respect the diligence in which you have done this work and the way you've applied it, hearing a story like Pam's and then doing that thousands of times and then mm-hmm. correlating this into scriptural references and all. What is the pitch to the non-believer where you used to be and now where you're no longer? Because you have seen this and heard this so consistently, so vibrantly. I know you don't fear the next step.
No.
And speak to that non-believer.
Yeah, Jim, there is so much evidence, if evidence is really what you want. And, you know, I didn't even get into it, but verifiable observations. So what I was saying is when people are out of their bodies, they can see what's happening in their resuscitation. I interviewed cardiologists who said, I started interviewing these patients, and they described the resuscitation I did in a way that they couldn't possibly have known. I could have used the recording to teach other physicians how to do resuscitation.
Huh. They were that alert.
Well,
and seeing.
It's that they somehow had a perspective out of their body. They had no brain waves, and yet they're able to report on things that there have been studies done that show their observations are 92% completely accurate.
Wow.
Now that's unbelievable. That's one. Second, when people blind from birth have a near-death experience, they can see. Huh. And they report seeing things like the light of heaven. And we're talking about consistent reports of blind people and sighted people that the light of heaven comes out of everything. And it's not like light on earth. It's love and it's life all together.
And they know it and feel it.
Well, they see it.
And see it.
And experience it. But a blind person wouldn't have heard that. And that's what John says in Revelation 21. There's no sun and moon in heaven, for the glory of God is its light, and the Lamb, Jesus, is its lamp, and the nations will walk in that light.
Mm. In 1 Corinthians, it says, no eye has seen, no ear has heard, no mind has even imagined what God has prepared for those. And so it is beyond our comprehension, because isn't that the kind of God we want? Yes, that's the God of the Bible that is bigger and stronger, more beautiful than anything we can imagine.
And that's the third thing I'd say to an atheist or an agnostic is that, you know, I interviewed people personally, 70 from every continent for this new book, Imagine the God of Heaven. And they're from every spiritual background, Buddhist, Muslim, Jewish, agnostic, Hindu. They are testifying to the God of the Bible.
Because they see the same or similar
and
things.
And I'm showing it. I mean,
he's the creator
I'm
God.
Showing it. He's the only God, but he's always been the God of all nations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, John, in that respect, this feeling, you know, so many people that don't believe in Jesus have sometimes really, you know, a bad perception or perspective about the church, and I was treated bad by Christians once. Speak specifically to them that God loves them. God loves you and cares about you. And we know that as Christians. Sometimes we don't demonstrate it to those non-believers attitudinally.
Yeah.
But just touch on that aspect of it, that as you've talked to these people, the love of God is something we cannot comprehend.
Yeah, and I mean, Pam could tell you firsthand, I'm sure, but what they commonly say is just what she said. There aren't enough adjectives.
Synonyms.
Right. There just aren't. Yeah, I've had people tell me, imagine standing in the ocean and the best human love is like waves gently lapping against your knees. And then here comes God's love, and it's a tsunami that just washes away all fear, all concern, all worry. And another thing that many near-death experiences—
It gives you all peace.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a peace that's not even like our peace, right?
It's beyond comprehension. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I was kind of shocked of how many near-death experiencers told me is that in Jesus' presence— They said, you know it wasn't true, but I felt like I was the only, like his only child, like mm-hmm. the only one he loved.
Yeah, I was wrapped in him, and I knew that he was in charge of the whole world and in charge of all of heaven, and all of heaven was worshiping him, but it felt like I was his only girl, and I had his full attention, and he was ministering to my deepest needs that I didn't even know that I had. And when he allowed me to come back to this earth, the first verse that he gave me in my quiet time was, "You have delivered me from death, even my feet from stumbling, to walk before God in the light of life." And I thought that phrase, light of life, that's what transitions. It's here on earth. If you want to know it, it's in heaven because he created heaven. It is who he is, yeah. Light and life.
Wow. I mean, that is
so true.
I love it. I think you're getting the feeling here and the intellectual observation of what these people have gone through. And I want to encourage you to get in touch with us. I mean, we are here for you. We want to express that light, that life that you will have in Jesus. If you're there and you know the Lord, but you're not sure about this life after, man, get a copy and a bundle of these two great books. And we'll make it easy. Just make a gift of any amount. We'll send them to you. If you can't afford it, get in touch with us. We'll trust others. We'll cover the cost of that because this is so important. Mm-hmm. To know the Lord in this life so you have everlasting life.
Mm-hmm. You have the hope of heaven. And I think that John being on the bestsellers list consistently since you wrote that book, Imagine Heaven, shares the hunger that we have for the mm-hmm. hope of heaven.
Yeah. Find answers and get help from us here at Focus on the Family when you call 800, the letter A, and the word family. 800-232-6459. You can also go online for so much more in the way of resources. We have the bundle of books that Jim mentioned, Imagine Heaven and Glimpse of God's Glory. And then we also have a free audio collection that you can download. It's called Remembering the Hope of Heaven, which contains more conversations with John Burke and Lee Strobel and Randy Alcorn. And you'll also get this episode, of course, that you heard today with some extra bonus content. All of this and much more at our website, and that's focusonthefamily.com. And as we close out, let me remind you that Focus on the Family is listener-supported. At this point, we really need your help to continue providing powerful, faith-building programs like the one you've heard today, and to offer resources and other tools to strengthen families. If Focus on the Family has helped you in any way, please consider a generous donation today. And you can make that financial contribution online or over the phone. Thanks for listening to Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back as we once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.